So tonight we're going to end our series in Ruth, as Nathan mentioned. And tonight we're going to read the whole of chapter 4. So Ruth 4, starting from verse 1, page 269. Meanwhile, Boaz went up to the town gate and sat there. When the kinsman redeemer he had mentioned came along, Boaz said, "Come over here, my friend, and sit down." So he went over and sat down. Boaz took 10 of the elders of the town and said, "Sit here," and they did so. Then he said to the kinsman redeemer, Naomi, "Who has come back from Moab is selling the piece of land that belonged to our brother Elimelech. I thought I should bring the matter to your attention and suggest that you buy it in the presence of these seated here and in the presence of the elders of my people. If you will redeem it, do so. But if you will not, tell me so that I will know. For no one has the right to do it except you, and I am next in line." "I will redeem it," he said. Then Boaz said, "On the day you buy the land from Naomi and from Ruth the Moabitess, you acquire the dead man's widow in order to maintain the name of the dead with his property." At this, the kinsman redeemer said, "Then I cannot redeem it because I might endanger my own estate. You redeem it yourself. I cannot do it." Now, in earlier times in Israel, for the redemption and transfer of property to become final, one party took off his sandal and gave it to the other. This was the method of legalizing transactions in Israel. So the kinsman redeemer said to Boaz, "Buy it yourself," and he removed his sandal. Then Boaz announced to the elders and all the people, "Today you are witnesses that I have bought from Naomi all the property of Elimelech, Chilion, and Mahlon. I have also acquired Ruth the Moabitess, Mahlon's widow, as my wife, in order to maintain the name of the dead with his property, so that his name will not disappear from among his family or from the town records. Today you are witnesses." Then the elders and all those at the gate said, "We are witnesses. May the Lord make the woman who is coming into your home like Rachel and Leah, who together built up the house of Israel. May you have standing in Ephratah and be famous in Bethlehem. Through the offspring the Lord gives you by this young woman, may your family be like that of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah." So Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife. Then he went to her, and the Lord enabled her to conceive, and she gave birth to a son. The woman said to Naomi, "Praise be to the Lord, who this day has not left you without a kinsman redeemer. May he become famous throughout Israel. He will renew your life and sustain you in your old age, for your daughter-in-law, who loves you and who is better to you than seven sons, has given him birth." Then Naomi took the child, laid him in her lap, and cared for him. The woman living there said, "Naomi has a son," and they named him Obed. He was the father of Jesse, the father of David. This then is the family line of Perez. Perez was the father of Hezron. Hezron the father of Ram. Ram the father of Amminadab. Amminadab the father of Nahshon. Nahshon the father of Salmon. Salmon the father of Boaz. Boaz the father of Obed. Obed the father of Jesse. And Jesse the father of David. So what is your greatest need in life? Is it to have something, maybe to be something, or is it something else, something you may not have thought about before? The best movie of all time, according to IMDb, the popular movie database website, is The Shawshank Redemption. It tells the story of a man who gets wrongly imprisoned and experiences years of hardship. Now, during his years of suffering in jail, he explains to others how he hangs on to a hope which his suffering cannot take from him. He stays faithful to this hope, and eventually, when he escapes from prison, there is a famous scene where he looks to the sky in the pouring rain. And this image is a picture of a man who has experienced redemption. He has gone from suffering to being set free. The Book of Ruth tells us a beautiful story of how we can be redeemed if we put our hope in Jesus and stay faithful to him. Now, in the last few weeks, you've worked through chapters 1 to 3, which shows an example of how God loves and provides for all who actively choose to stay faithful to him during faithless times. And tonight we're going to look at how Ruth 4 concludes the story and what Ruth, Boaz, and Naomi's faithfulness can teach us. Now, usually at the start of the final episode of a TV series, they will do a quick recap of the key storylines. So, in the same fashion, to help us see the purpose of chapter 4, I'm going to spend a few moments clarifying who the main characters are and what's happened to them so far. So the book of Ruth is set in the period of the Judges, where the Israelites are rebelling against God's rule and have become a godless society. Now this is summarised in Judges 21, verse 25, which says, how in those days Israel had no king, and everyone did as they saw fit. As a result of this rebellion, God judged them through a famine in Bethlehem, which Naomi and her family fled from, but only experienced tragedy. Naomi lost both her husband and two sons, but through one of her son's marriages gained a loyal daughter-in-law called Ruth, who returned with her to Bethlehem. There, Ruth worked in the fields of one of Naomi's relatives called Boaz, who she is hoping will act as their kinsman redeemer. Now, kinsman redeemer simply means the person who acts on behalf of someone to rescue them and take care of them. And in Ruth 4, everything begins to unfold. We're all set for a happy ending, but there is one problem. There is a man who is a closer relative than Boaz to Elimelech, who is Naomi's husband, and he has first refusal to marry Ruth, have the family's land, and give her a future. Now, I've only been fishing a few times in my life, and none of these times did I ever require a special chair to reel in my mackerel. And when I did go, I always struggled to get the fish to take the bait. Now, Boaz, in verses 1 to 13, puts his redemption plan into action to win Ruth. And using godly integrity, he dramatically reels in the closer relative using materialistic bait. And then when the moment is right, he makes the catch and completes the legal resolution. Now, in verses 1 to 6, we are shown an example of how obedience is one of the great characteristics of living a faithful life. And the writer wastes no time in telling us who is driving these proceedings. And this scene carries on the following morning after chapter 3 and is initiated by Boaz in verse 1. The opening scene is set at the city gate, which is an open area inside the town entrance where business and local judicial proceedings take place. In chapter 3, verse 13, we are left wondering how Boaz will redeem Ruth, and we find out here that he's taking the matter to a court of law. When he got to the court, he sat down. And you might think this is a little laid back, but this was a recognisable act to the citizens to say he had legal business. When Boaz in chapter 3 said he would redeem Ruth, he invoked the name of the Lord to show a sign of his determination to complete the resolution. We are then introduced to the other man who Boaz is going to have to come up against, and notice the hand of God overruling in his arrival, as in verse 1, God had sent the other man to pass through the gate at the right time while Boaz was sitting there, probably on his way out of town to go to work that morning. Now, the other man remains nameless in order to reduce our respect for him. In order for Boaz to do the deal, he needs witnesses. So in verse 2, he gathers 10 elders. Now, these men probably had day jobs, which they would have had to leave, which shows Boaz's stature and reputation within the town. Now, verse 2 shows how this is no formal pre-organized event, as he hurriedly tells them to sit here. The elders are probably wondering what is going on, so Boaz wastes no time to get to the point in verse 3 as he begins to cast out his fishing line, hoping the unnamed kinsman will take the bait. With godly integrity, he fairly sets out the terms of the deal and mentions how Naomi's land is up for grabs. Now, this land is up for sale, as Naomi had left it behind when she went to Moab, and since then, it had fallen into the hands of someone outside the family. Now, Boaz is providing for her and Ruth. Naomi can turn her attention to the legal issues of trying to get her family holdings back. And Boaz knew that gaining the rights to Naomi's land was key to winning Ruth's hand in marriage and to redeem her. The unnamed kinsman in verse 4 instantly bites at the chance for more land, simply saying, "I will redeem it." You can imagine if Ruth were watching at this moment, she would be probably feeling a little unwell. So at this point, the unnamed kinsman thinks he has stumbled onto a deal. He will look like a good redeemer, get a nice piece of land with no strings attached and at a bargain price. This emphatic decision soon turns into a huge error. Boaz is not surprised or disappointed by the kinsman's decision to redeem the land. He uses wisdom to anticipate the response. Now, Boaz in verse 5 throws in the addition of Ruth into the deal. The kinsman's perspective is changed immediately, and he is also reminded by Boaz that she is a Moabitess, which means she is like a refugee, and that added extra doubt to the man's decision. Now, legally, they did not have to marry. Ruth as part of the deal. However, Boaz felt a moral obligation to provide security for her and was prepared to operate on these terms despite the great cost to himself. So what looked like an easy way to financial gain has now changed into a situation which could leave the kinsman broke. If he had to support Ruth, he would also have to support the upbringing of any of Ruth's children. Also, the land he was purchasing from Naomi would eventually revert to Ruth's child. Now, having to look after Ruth, Naomi, and the potential child, and the upkeep of the land would drain his own estate, leaving his own children with nothing. So faced with this economic and ethical dilemma in verse 6, he says how he cannot afford it. Now, what an incredible turnaround. In one move, the kinsman has gone from jumping at the chance to redeem to can't jump out of the way quickly enough. And this decision highlights the contrast between the man and Boaz, who is more concerned about the interest of others, a sign of true believer. In chapter 3, verse 10, we learn that Boaz is probably an older man, so there is a reduced chance of him having more than one son with Ruth. And because of the custom of the time, the firstborn son in the marriage would carry Elimelech's name, which means Boaz is giving up the future of his name for the sake of Elimelech. So how often do we willingly do things when we know there would be personal cost to ourselves? Verses 1 to 6 show us how, in order to redeem someone, it comes at great personal cost. Boaz made the decision to try to redeem Ruth at great personal cost to himself, but yet he does so willingly and with integrity because he believes it is the right thing to do in obedience to God. In order to experience redemption, we need to keep following and trusting in Jesus. So obedience is one of the key ingredients of living a faithful life, and a faithful life will help us stay close to God and keep us on the path to redemption. In verses 7 to 12, the business deal concludes, and we are shown how God will reward those that are faithful to him. Now, earlier in the year, David Beckham signed for a French football team called Paris Saint-Germain. And during the press conference, the chairman gave him a football shirt, which he held up to publicly show the deal was complete. And to conclude the deal in Ruth 4, the kinsman redeemer hands Boaz his shoe, which seems so unusual that we need verse 7 to explain how it's part of the custom of the time to show the deal is complete. And this action was a legal sign of redemption to show how Boaz now had the legal rights to redeem Ruth, as he had transferred her rights and responsibilities to him. Then as quickly as the kinsman leaves, Boaz begins to charge the witnesses assembled. Now Beckham at his press conference told the people that he would give his wages to charity, and that he, as he said in front of the media, it was on the record, there was no turning back. And Boaz here in verses 9 and 10 is stating on the record to the assembled elders, acting as witnesses, that he will purchase the family estate, marry Ruth, and take on the responsibility of looking after Naomi and the potential child. In essence, he is giving the family a new lease of life by redeeming them. We then see the gathered onlookers in verse 12 wish them well, pronouncing prayerful blessings on their lives and on their anticipated descendants. And the elders build up Ruth and Boaz as local and national heroes by comparing them to the mothers of Israel's tribes and the elite Perizzite clan of Judah. Now, when Ruth and Naomi took their first few exhausted steps through the gate of Bethlehem in chapter 1, they never expected to be in the same location a few weeks later in a courtroom scene that would permanently change their lives for good. And this redemption through Boaz that Ruth has experienced shows how faithfulness is rewarded by God. And in chapter 1, when Ruth committed herself to Naomi, there was a lot of uncertainty regarding how they would survive in the future. Yet when Boaz committed himself to her, their personal security was no longer in question. However, one question still remained. What would be the future of their family? And why is this family significant? And how could the events in chapter 4 affect our future? Now, last year, you may have seen on TV, an Austrian man called Felix Baumgartner did the highest ever skydive from a balloon at 128,000 feet. Now, when he reached the jump height in the balloon and looked out at Earth, he said, "Sometimes you have to go up really high to understand how small you are." Now, what he realized was that sometimes you have to go up high to get a different perspective. In verses 13 to 17, we go up high to see a spaceship view of how God provides for those faithful to him. God shows in Ruth 4 how he can use unexpected people and unlikely means to accomplish amazing things in and through our lives. In these verses, we see how this worked out over time in Naomi's life. These verses show the final scene in this wonderful drama. It begins in verse 13 with Boaz fulfilling his promise to marry Ruth. The plan has worked and Ruth has a husband. And despite her years of childless marriage and with her previous husband, referenced in chapter 1, she has no difficulty in becoming pregnant, highlighting the Lord's intervention. The period in time from Ruth chapter 1 verse 6 to chapter 4 verse 12 is only a few months. But now the writer in verse 13 is skipping forward a year as he is more concerned about the child being produced and the first year of marriage, which we can assume was wonderful for them. So who is this child and why is he so special? Well, in verse 14, the local women share in the joy of the newborn as he will take over the role from his father of kinsman redeemer for Naomi. They prayerfully also believe he is also destined for national greatness, hinting how this child may have great blessings ahead. These women were mocking Naomi in chapter 1, but now are praising her. And through this child, Naomi is experiencing what I love in Sainsbury's, a two-for-one deal. Verse 15 shows that when the child is grown up, he will provide emotional support for renewing Naomi's life and also help physically sustain her in her old age, taking on the role of kinsman redeemer after Boaz. Now, the child who in verse 17 we learn is called Obed will provide great encouragement and service for Naomi. In those days, it was a very male-orientated society, which makes the second half of verse 15 all the more poignant. The women gathered at this scene in Bethlehem give Ruth the ultimate accolade by saying how not only did she dearly love her friend Naomi, she turned out to be worth more than seven sons to her. Now, the number seven is the biblical number for completeness or perfection, and so this was the ideal number of children for all Hebrew families to have. Now, in this extremely happy ending, Naomi's family is completed not by the quota of sons, but by a Moabite woman who is the source of all her blessings. And Proverbs 31 verse 10 reminds us how if you've got a woman in your life, be it wife, daughter or daughter-in-law, she is a priceless gem who will sparkle in your life. It will be a while before baby Obed assumes his duties to serve and care for Naomi. In the meantime, in verse 17, Naomi takes the child in her arms and joyfully helps take care of him. Now, as Naomi is said to take care of Obed, we're not sure of her exact role, be it guardian or proud grandmother, but we can assume that she looked after Obed up until the age when he could care for her for the rest of her life. To have Obed is amazing considering how only a short time ago her family had no future. And this is an example of how God can turn things around in the lives of those who stay faithful to him. So by the end of verse 17, the narrative story is basically over. If this were a TV show, it would probably end here and you get a montage of Ruth and Boaz walking away along a beach into the sunset. So why doesn't the story end there? The BBC have recently, well, the last few years, been running a documentary programme called Who Do You Think You Are? which involves different celebrities trying to uncover and explore their family history. Now, when Jeremy Clarkson was asked to research his family history, his abrupt response was that it was too boring to bother with, and he couldn't understand why anyone would be interested in finding out about the lives of his ancestors. Now, verses 18 to 22 give us an insight into the family tree of the baby Obed. But why would the author feel the Israelites would be bothered about knowing this? Why include all of these names? The reason the book doesn't end there is because of Obed, Ruth's child. And this child has a link to our Redeemer and thus our redemption. Now, during this period of the Judges, the Israelites were without a king, without rules and without hope. They needed a king who would provide strong leadership and a hope for the future. This family tree provides both a future king and also a reminder of the ongoing royal promise referenced in Genesis 49, verse 10, about the emerging eternal family line which is to come. Now, these names, like the book of Ruth, have been elegantly crafted. There are 10 names which all bridge the history of the Israelites. The first five bridge the period from Israel's entry into Egypt until the Exodus period. And the last five bridge the conquest of the promised land to the first royal king of Judah, which is the name of the kingdom that Bethlehem was in. Now, the high-level purpose of Ruth and this genealogy, which means family history, is to show the Israelites how God, in his providence, prevented a missing link in the royal line from Perez to the anointed family member, David. So, last year I went to see Les Mis at the theatre, and whilst the actors are on the stage, behind the scenes, I could imagine there was a flurry of activity with hundreds of things going on as the next scene is prepared behind the backdrop, with props moving, costumes being changed, but you just don't see it happening. Now, this is partly because we were sitting so far towards the back, we were practically in a different building, but mainly due to the fact that it's all part of their plan, which has been meticulously thought through. You only see and are aware of a few of the hundreds of things going on at once. Now, God, through the book of Ruth, is showing us how he has a plan for our life, and if we trust in him as our saviour, he will work behind the scenes in our lives to provide for us and ultimately fulfil our greatest need to be forgiven through redemption in Jesus. The Israelites were in need of a redeemer, and through the family line of Boaz, God gave them a royal king called David. Now, Ruth's marriage to Boaz accomplished even more than this missing link in the chain to King David. It maintained the family movement towards the rightful eternal King Jesus. And by the end of this family tree, God has painted a picture of his salvation. So when we go up high and take a helicopter view of the Israelites who are in spiritual decline, what can we say is their greatest need? The same as ours, redemption. Now, in New York City, there's a giant digital counter on one of the banks that shows the US national debt. Now, this clock is wearing away, constantly increasing and highlighting how there is no way back. And this clock is a bit like our sin, which is our debt to God. And every day we sin, and our debt only gets bigger as our sinful lives go on. Now, we're in so much debt to God, we could never repay him, so we will get judged. We need a kinsman redeemer, a rescuer, someone to represent us in front of God and say, I've paid the price for their debt. And that man is Jesus. Jesus is our Redeemer. So do you believe that God has a plan for your life? Do you trust he is in control and that he will redeem you? The story of Ruth shows how God had a plan for the Israelites and also for us, which we can be part of if we simply believe and are willing to live faithful, obedient lives in response. So how does the need for redemption motivate you? If you don't see the need to be redeemed by Jesus, how can you redeem yourself? What have you got to offer God in exchange for your own life? Redemption through Jesus is the only way to be saved. Now, I wonder if you've been to London recently and seen the Shard, London's tallest skyscraper. I read recently that it's having trouble filling its office space, and this causes a revenue issue for the owners. As the article said, it costs around £150,000 a year just to clean the windows. Now, keeping a skyscraper clean comes at a great cost. Redemption also comes at a great cost. Boaz did not take the easy option in life, choosing to redeem Naomi's land and give up his inheritance to share it, looking after Ruth, Naomi, and Obed. He actively chose to give his life to redeem these two women because he felt it was the right thing to do out of obedience with God. Now, choosing to do the obedient thing may not be the easiest choice in life. There can be great cost associated with the decisions involved in living a faithful and obedient life. Jesus actively chose to live a life of obedience to God, by living a perfect life and dying on the cross to pay the painful price for our debt of sin so that we can be redeemed. Now, Jesus is acting as our kinsman redeemer, acting on our behalf to lovingly and willingly rescue us. He was not interested in his own salvation, but ours. And we can learn from Ruth and Naomi about responding in faithfulness to God, who had a plan to redeem us, which Jesus bore the cost. Now, Ruth and Naomi trusted in God and were faithful to him, even during times of extreme unfaithfulness around them. To show our faith, we must try to live lives that are obedient and faithful to God, displaying the hope and confidence we have in Jesus as our Saviour to others. Now, I wonder what your fences or boundaries are for serving or sharing the gospel. Do you avoid attending or supporting things the church does because you feel the cost is too great for you, or it's outside of your comfort zone, or because it clashes with your TV night? Maybe you think there aren't any opportunities, but is there really ever a shortage of gospel opportunities? Now, imagine you had a sales job, which was to sell the gospel, and God, as your boss, gave you a performance review. How would you fare? Would he say you're doing a brilliant job? Are we prepared to take on the role of seeking to share the gospel with others at great cost to ourselves? Remember the ultimate cost Jesus paid to redeem you. And finally, selfless love. Boaz chose to marry Ruth out of selfless love. But what is the purpose of marriage? Do you think it's to put you in a place where you can be happy forever because it goes on and on? Is happiness your number one goal? The purpose of marriage is about sacrifice. It is to help get your spouse get from here to heaven. Your job is to see their sinful old self and the new self that God is calling them to be, and you need to try to help them become that person. And this is always going to be an ongoing job, as the sinful self will always override. Now, if you're not married, then this can apply to family or friends. Boaz, out of selfless, sacrificial love, chose to marry Ruth to help her get to heaven. Jesus, out of selfless love, chose to die on the cross so that we may get to heaven. Make redemption your goal. By showing selfless love, you will experience happiness as a byproduct. Now, do you think living a life obedient to Christ is easy? No, it's hard work. Now, do you think Ruth and Naomi found it hard to trust in God for provision whilst amongst the rebellious Israelites? Naomi experienced extreme hardship. She lost everything, but she kept her faith, looked to God for provision, and God redeemed her through Boaz. So when we look back at the whole of Ruth, we can see the incredible providence and grace of God. All along, God knew Boaz would receive the right to marry Ruth, that Jesus would be born and laid in a feeding trough not far from where Ruth harvested the fields and proposed to Boaz. God knew the shepherds who came to see the newborn Jesus tended their flocks in the same fields where David, Ruth's great-grandson, protected the family sheep. The picture of judgment through the famine in Bethlehem was turning to salvation first through David, then through Jesus. Bethlehem, which means the house of bread, would one day be the place where Jesus, the bread of life, would be born. Now, an elder at our church once said at a church meeting, "The hardest decisions in life are sometimes the easiest." And looking at Ruth's life, her difficult decisions were made easy. She was led to the right job, she got the right boss, and was guided to the right man. Now, if you're a believer, what keeps you going? Do you ever think about what it will feel like when you get to heaven? Do you think about the true, real bounty waiting for you in heaven? Do you dream of being set free from the chains of sin to enjoy it? Do you want others to experience that? Now, maybe this week, reflect about how much and at what cost to you. Obedience and faithfulness comes at a cost, but follow the examples of Ruth, Naomi, and Boaz and see Christ's redemption plan. See Christ for you and for others, so that you may be set free. And I encourage you to put your hope in Jesus, as he can set you free.